This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans? Or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place, whether you're in the mood for a carnival treat. The story of a special unit of soldiers who rescued stolen cultural treasures from Nazi destruction. Or a comedic political satire. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Mardi Gras is March 4th, but you don't have to wait until then to get into the spirit of carnival. A photography exhibit opening at Lemieux Galleries will have you saying, "Hey, Mardi Gras," as Stan Strombicki captures the essence of our city's marching bands. He joins me now by phone from St. Louis. Stan, welcome to Inside the Arts. Tell me, how did you, a professor of art at Washington University in St. Louis, develop a passion for New Orleans Mardi Gras?
Well, you know, I'm one of those New Englanders. I actually grew up in Rhode Island that had a very skewed notion of what Mardi Gras was. I thought Mardi Gras was a big parade that went down Bourbon Street on Fat Tuesday, and then the party was over. I moved to St. Louis in 1982, and in 1984 I was hired by a sculptor who was on our faculty and had been on the faculty at Newcomb to come down and photograph an installation out in Metairie. And it was the first time I'd been to New Orleans, and I was so taken with the city. I kind of fell in love with it right away, like so many people do. And I started coming down during my spring break. After that, I came down for the first time, I said before, in 84. And when I would come down in March, people would say, "Oh, man, you should have been here last week. You know, it was the Mardi Gras. You should have come down." And in 1990, I came down for the first time for Mardi Gras, and I'd just never seen anything like it. And my whole notion of what Mardi Gras was really changed because I began to understand that Mardi Gras was in so many ways a reflection of the culture and so many different aspects of the city. And I was so taken by that. And I photographed Mardi Gras every year since then. So this is number 23 or number 24 for me.
Wow, it's more than a couple of decades that you've been photographing Mardi Gras in the city.
Yeah, and when you photograph something for that long, you don't have to reinvent the wheel every time you come down. I have an extensive archive of pictures of floats and people on floats and people interacting with floats. And at some point, you begin to understand that Mardi Gras, in a lot of ways, has so many different facets to it. You know, if you think about the second line groups like the Baby Dolls and the 610 Stompers and those people, if you think about the culture of the Flambeaux, all these things are like different aspects of it that you can kind of like investigate it as a visual artist. And as a university professor who teaches in the School of Art, my research is to kind of examine visual culture. And one of the things that I've kind of zeroed in on in Mardi Gras as a whole, but is certainly the notion of what role do the marching bands play as part of this. And they're really integral to it. One of the things that I discovered in doing research and finding out about all these different marching units is that in New Orleans, in a lot of ways, the marching bands that you do in high school, it's kind of like the farm team for professional musicians. If you want to use the baseball analogy, that so many young musicians kind of learn their craft, they kind of learn the tradition when they're in high school in these marching bands. And that's, I think, one of the really, really, really interesting things about the function that Carnival and Mardi Gras plays in terms of the broader culture of New Orleans.
So how did you go about capturing the essence of these bands?
I don't really see myself so much as a pure documentarian. What I see myself is a visual artist who wants to communicate the experience of being on the parade route and having these bands pass by. And I've used different visual techniques to kind of accomplish that. I'm very fond of seeing most of my parades up on Napoleon, where you have a little more freedom to kind of like get into the street and really be kind of part of it. And it's also a very family, kind of friendly kind of atmosphere up there. So it gives me a chance to see the parades before they start, to watch them tuning up, to kind of preparing for it, and then to photograph them as they come by.
Can you describe a few of your photos?
I'm in close proximity with most of the people. What I do is I'll zero in on one or two musicians. I use a wide-angle lens. I use an auxiliary flash so that the lighting is somewhat dramatic. And then there's a technique that I use called dragging the shutter, where you have a flash and you have kind of a longer exposure to give a sense of motion and activity so that you really feel that you're right there with all the noise and all the visual stimulation that's part of the work.
Was there a photo that was particularly challenging for you to capture?
The hard thing is that while they're playing, they're all moving. So it's very much a moving target, and you're kind of on the sidewalk, and you pretty much got to make your shot. You only get one shot at doing it. So it's always challenging, and I won't tell you that I haven't been hit on the head a few times with a trombone.
Are the photos color, black and white, or both?
All my work is in color because I think color really suits the parade. In the many years I've been photographing Mardi Gras, I've photographed with just about every format and film type you can imagine. But in the last, 8 years or so, I've been shooting mostly digital. The prints are around 17 by 24 inches for the actual image size, although I've done additions of the work that's much larger. The work that's going to be at Lemieux will be about 17 by 24, and I think they're framed up around 22 by 28, something like that.
Do you have a favorite band?
The McDonough 35, I'm very fond of them. The traditions that they bring to the work, I think, are really great. I think Warren Easton, they put on a really good show, too. It's funny, you photograph these things long enough and over a period of time, you really start paying attention to what high schools they kind of come from. And this is kind of interesting because I did a major five-year investigation of post-Katrina New Orleans. And oddly enough, I had the experience of photographing some of these wrecked school buildings and just being so sad at seeing all these ruined instruments in the mud and everything after the storm. And then to see all the great work that organizations like the Tipitina Foundation did to get all these instruments back into these high schools, and then to see them again right after Mardi Gras back out on the street working these parades, it was a terrific experience doing that. And you really kind of feel emotionally invested.
What do you hope locals will experience through your lens this Mardi Gras?
For those that go to the parades and experience the bands coming by, you know, to them it'll be a touchstone for that experience. For those that perhaps have never had the experience of being at a parade and listening to the band, it'll kind of put them in that place. There's kind of an immediacy to my work that I think you get when you look at it. You feel that you're there and you're part of it.
Stan, thanks so much. Stan Strzembicki's photo exhibit, Bands of Mardi Gras, is on view at Lemieux Galleries, 332 Julia Street, through February 28th. The exhibit will open with an artist reception on Saturday from 6 to 8 p.m. The National World War II Museum is planning a tribute to the men and women of the Monuments Men. Eileen Fleming explains that the special soldiers in the little-known unit rescued stolen cultural treasures from Nazi destruction.
Ever hear about the Monuments Men? A crack team of art experts who ensured the salvation of priceless works of art. Well, you will. A film starring George Clooney, Matt Damon, Cate Blanchett, and New Orleans' own John Goodman is being released next week. It's called Monuments Men and is based on a book by World War II Museum trustee Robert Edsel. Edsel hadn't heard of them either.
I was living in Florence, Italy in 1996. I moved there to pursue finding some new career. It turned out that what I did was carve out time and allowed the new career to find me. This is a story that I tripped on quite by accident, walking across the Ponte Vecchio one day, the only bridge in Florence not destroyed by the Nazis when they fled the city in August 1944. And I wondered how, in the face of the most destructive conflict in history, a war that cost the lives of 65 million people, so many of the works of art and other cultural treasures survived, and who were the people that saved them? And I wasn't embarrassed that I didn't know the answer, but I was hugely embarrassed. It had never occurred to me to ask a question.
So he asked around. He ended up co-producing a documentary film based on the book The Rape of Europa about looted artwork. In that research, he came across the story of the Monuments Men, which is a bit off because there were women involved and 13 nations participated. Edsel describes the people involved.
Men and women, middle-aged museum directors, curators, art historians, artists themselves, who volunteered for service during World War II to become a new kind of soldier, one charged with saving rather than destroying.
But movies aren't as sticklers for the truth as a museum, so sometimes the characters in the movie are a mix of different people. John Goodman explained his part before hosting a special screening of the film at the museum's theater.
He's based on a real person. They changed the name just in case they didn't want me, in case I screwed up.
And he says he wants to learn more about the real team.
After all, it's a movie. It's fiction based on reality. It's heightened reality.
And you say you want to learn more. How are you going to do that?
Mr. Edsel's written a couple more books that I'm interested in. And learn more about the people that were trying to protect the fingerprints of Western civilization from being wiped off the face of the map.
And that's where the museum comes in. A permanent 1,700-square-foot exhibit is planned for the upcoming Liberation Pavilion, the last of the permanent exhibition halls at the museum. It will look like one of the many salt mines where art treasures were stashed during the war. Museum President Nick Mueller says there will be electronic kiosks to show the paintings that were recovered. War stations will be set up for an interactive experience. He says the new building seemed a natural home for the exhibit.
We are telling this story in the Liberation Pavilion because the Liberation Pavilion talks about the discovery of the camps, the concentration camps at the end of the war, the cost of victory, the stories of liberation, and there's also a chapel reflecting on the spiritual dimensions of the war and the chaplain's story.
Edsel's Monuments Men Foundation will also be asking the public to join in the search for art that's still missing. Information is available on the foundation's website. Meantime, the museum has raised about $7 million so far for the new pavilion that's expected to cost up to $30 million. It's planned to open in 2016 or 2017. For WWNO's Inside the Arts, I'm Eileen Fleming.
You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Louisiana is a state with a reputation for its colorful politics. Now enter The Totalitarians, a dark comedy about the state of political discourse in the Cornhusker State, Nebraska. The new drama is being presented by Southern Rep Theater. And joining me now are playwright Peter Sin Nachtrieb, actress Judith Hawking, and Southern Rep Artistic Director Aimé Hayes. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Diane.
Thank you.
So are we on the brink of a revolution in the Cornhusker State?
Maybe. It depends who you believe in the play. And that's sort of what the play is all about.
So, Peter, tell me about the play. What was the inspiration for you?
The initial inspiration was wanting to write a play about belief, and especially in ideologies and politics, and why do we believe what we do about a person, about a politician, and what sort of facts do we ignore or absorb to support our beliefs? And my sort of gut feeling was that somehow in the last 10 years of politics, belief and facts have been reversed, that we now choose what we believe in and then try to assemble materials to support that, as opposed to observing the world, trying to take in what you think is happening, and then constructing a belief from that. So that's sort of my question, is how did this sort of get turned on its head in the political sphere? And how does that end up in people lying to themselves, lying to each other? And why can't we be honest anymore when we're having political discussions? It almost seems like it's more important to win an argument than to be right.
And Aimé, why did you want to bring this work to New Orleans?
I think Peter is one of the funniest playwrights alive running around the world. And it is such a pleasure and so exciting to have this kind of really just vibrant, jump-off-the-page comedy happening at Southern Rep. It's right up my alley. And being a Louisianian, a New Orleanian, there's nothing I love more than a political showdown. And it's exciting to see it happen on the stage.
And Judith, what is the storyline and what role do you play?
I have the best role. No, they're all good. I play Penelope Easter, who is an incredibly sheeny-haired, vapid, spoiled rich woman who decides that she wants to run for office. And the interesting thing that happens along the way is because she is so charismatic, because she is so good at reading people, because she's so good at being empathetic, all she needs is someone to give her the right words. And so when she meets the young woman who is the speech writer who can give her the right words, then it's like oil to fire and she goes nova. She explodes. And what's so beautiful, and Peter and I have been working on this for, I don't know, maybe 2.5 years at this point. Yeah. So it's really interesting to see how sharp it is now and how on the money it is. It's a beautiful diamond that we're not only polishing now, there's a lot of colors to it. So it plays on many different levels. And the most important thing is it's really, really, really funny. So while people are laughing, I think there's going to be a lot of knowing, oh, yes, that's us, or I just saw that.
What can audiences learn from this work?
I'm going to jump in here, Diane. Part of what Southern Rep's really been trying to do this year is expand the offerings around the play. So after the show, we have a lot of post-show discussions and great panelists this year. And on this show, we have a new program called Analyze Dat. So after the play, a psychiatrist will help you talk about what you felt during the play. It's going to be very exciting.
Now, can I an echo on that? Because the center of the play is a couple that's getting pulled apart by their beliefs about this candidate. So there's this relationship that gets sort of trapped in the middle of this political campaign. And this husband and wife get pulled apart. And so I don't know if that's going to relate to the post-show.
It makes you wonder if this is what Mary Madeline and James Carville go through when they are looking at a particular candidate. I agree. I don't agree. And we're also going to be having a couple of talkbacks about rhetoric and propaganda, women in politics in Louisiana, and the highs and lows of Louisiana politics. So I think what the play will do is sort of open up this conversation. You'll be laughing and laughing, and then afterwards you can say, wow, but you know, some of that was maybe true. I've seen that in the media, or that politician did do something like that. And I think that that's a way to bring it all together.
And Peter, can you tie in the title for us?
The Totalitarians? Yes. I think actually the initial title was Scenes from a Gently Totalitarian Society. That was the first title of the play. And I think during the workshop, I said, I think it's just called The Totalitarians. And in the plot, you're not sure whether or not this candidate is potentially wanting to transform Nebraska into a totalitarian regime. And that's sort of the main sort of story of the play. But I think it's also reflects to everyone's character in the piece, too, that how much do they organize the world around them being at the top of it and sort of that their truth is the truth and there is no other truth. And I think all the characters are sort of struggling with that in their sort of journeys towards wanting to be validated in their lives.
Was it important for you to have this rollout of the world premiere happen here in New Orleans?
It seems like a really great place to start. It seems like there's the right vibe in the city.
Will we recognize anybody in this play?
You mean real-life politicians, Diane?
From Louisiana? Uh-huh.
From Louisiana? Uh-huh. No.
And next question.
There's an amalgam of many people, I think, that there's something people will recognize these people. But I bet you that depending who you are, you will attribute their behavior to different people. Hopefully it's written in a way that's honest to these characters that will maybe remind you of other people. But nothing's particularly inspired by a specific actual person.
All right. Peterson Nachtrieb, Judith Hawking, and Aimee Hayes. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for having us.
Southern Rep Theater presents the National New Play Network rolling world premiere of The Totalitarians, opening tomorrow with performances running through February 23rd at Mid-City Theater, 3540 Toulouse Street. have something extra in our Lanyap Corner. Irvin Mayfield will hold his biannual lecture, Artistic Literacy, Life, Love, and Jazz at UNO in the Education Building, Room 103. A jazz jam will follow, featuring the Marine Corps Band New Orleans Ensemble and UNO Jazz Study students at the Cove Student Center. That's Thursday at 6 p.m. Le Petit Theatre has added another performance of Golda's Balcony on Sunday, February 9th at 3 p.m. The show was added following the cancellation of last weekend's Friday and Saturday night shows. More info at lepetittheatre.com. Photo Alliance, NOPA, presents Masquerade, a costume-themed exhibition juried by Aileen Smithson, founder and editor of Lens Scratch. Masquerade is a group exhibition exploring the transformative act of costuming, featuring works by 36 photographers. The exhibition will be on view from February 1st through March 30th at the New Orleans Photo Alliance Gallery, 1111 St. Mary Street in New Orleans' Lower Garden District. The opening reception will be held on Saturday, February 1st, from 6 to 9 p.m. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.